You are listening to IEEE Talk Software Process, where experts interview experts. I'm Scott Roy Smith, your host here at the IEEE Computer Society Studios in gorgeous Southern California. Right up front, I want to give you a warning. This is only for software professionals who need mission-critical, proven, and in-depth implementation of software quality, measurement, risk management, and Lean Six Sigma. The content of this podcast is peer-reviewed for accuracy, so you can count on results. Just add water and apply according to directions. So if you're ready, let's dig in. Today, our two experts are returning from previous episodes of this podcast series. They are IEEE Computer Society author Susan Cathy Land and IEEE Computer Society member and Lean Six Sigma Black Belt Douglas B. Smith. They are joining us by a conference call, and this time Cathy will interview Doug about the use of standards and Lean Six Sigma to improve software processes. Cathy and Doug, welcome to the call, and please take it away.
Thank you, Scott, and welcome to the call, Doug. It's great to have you here, and I want to get started, so I'll start off with asking you, what is Lean? Can you describe Lean for us?
Sure, Cathy. Lean is a continuous improvement approach that's focused on eliminating non-value-added activities, which Lean calls waste, or the Japanese term is muda. Lean has tools to see and eliminate waste, which helps you improve speed and efficiency. Lean descended from the same quality roots as TQM and Six Sigma, but in a few respects, it's a new way of thinking. And when you implement Lean as a whole, as an integrated vision, culture, and strategy, it helps you provide customers, both internal and external, with high quality, low cost, and short delivery times. The seminal book, the one that coined the term Lean, is Womack and Jones, The Machine That Changed the World. And in there, they describe Lean in terms of five principles, which is still the best definition of what Lean means. That first principle is to specify value by product. Again, value being the something that the customer wants in the product, that it's done right the first time, and done without waste. The second principle is to identify the value stream for each product, the process that goes from raw materials to the finished product, where that value, the things the customer want in the product, are added, the tasks that actually add that. So you identify that stream. The third principle is to make that value flow without interruptions. So you get rid of those wasteful steps that prevent you from continuously adding that value as rapidly as possible to the product. Fourth principle is to add that value in response to customer pull. So you let the customer pull from the producers, both starting with the end customer and then all the upstream products. So you don't produce things in advance. You make them as they're needed. And the fifth principle is to pursue perfection. As I said, it's a continuous improvement approach, and not be happy with a 50% reduction, because they find in Lean that you can typically cut time in half the first time you lean a process, and then a while later, as you improve the system around that process, you eventually get back around to it, and you can improve it in half again. So you continually pursue perfection and are never happy with the way a process works today. All of these principles are based on the work of Taichi Ono, who was the architect of TPS, the Toyota Production System. Toyota started with Henry Ford's automated workflow, but even Ford's system was still a batch and queue system. It was an assembly line that worked on big batches of the same product. And as Toyota and Ono went to adapt mass production to Toyota's environment in post-World War II Japan, they came up with the key insights of Lean, that doing things just in time with a single-piece flow instead of a batch in response to customer pull is the most efficient way to make things. So the goal of Lean is to eliminate all the activities that consume resources but don't add value in the stream as it flows from raw materials to customer receipt of product.
Okay, thanks, Doug. So you've described Lean. So now if you can tell us what describes Six Sigma for us.
Well, Six Sigma is also a continuous improvement approach. The term Six Sigma is based on a measurement standard of product variation that can be traced back to the 1920s when Sheward at Bell Labs showed that 3 sigma from the mean is the point where a process requires correction. This was the empirical basis for SPC, statistical process control, as we know it today. And then in the late 70s, Michael Harry at Motorola began to develop what are now the foundations of the Six Sigma program through his experimentations with statistical analysis and its applications to problem solving. the term Six Sigma as a name was credited to Motorola engineer Bill Smith, who his suggestion was that the company ought to have a 50% design margin for all its key product performance specifications. So when you take that 50% margin on top of FPC's 3 Sigma, that's what led Motorola to strive for a 6 Sigma level of capability in their key processes. The term Sigma itself stands for standard deviation. So that's a measure of variation. Being able to control the amount of variation in the output of a process is essential to the reduction of cost and improvement in quality, which directly impacts customer satisfaction. So Six Sigma has continued to evolve, and each organization tailors it a little bit as they implement it. But as generally known today, there are four principal components of Six Sigma. The first one is DMAIC. The DMAIC is a fact-based problem-solving process which consists of steps: define, measure, analyze, improve, and control. And typically you have tollgate reviews in between some or all of those phases. There are many variations on DMAIC. Key one would be design for Six Sigma variants like DMADVI, where you have the define, measure, analyze, followed by design and verify when you're developing a new process as opposed to improving an existing one. So that was component number one. Second component is a suite of tools that are used in that DMAIC process. These include the traditional seven basic QC tools, the Ishikawa or fishbone cause and effect diagram, check sheets, stratifying graphs, histograms, Pareto charts, scatter diagrams, and statistical process control charts, plus additional tools with a strong statistical basis and a heavy customer focus. So tools are the second component. Third component is the methodology for measuring process capability. And so when we talk about a process operating at Six Sigma, that's a level that equates to 3.4 defects per million defect opportunities. And what Six Sigma brought was the way to define DPMO, or defects per million opportunities, in a way that was applicable across a wide range of process areas so that you can compare them all using that standard DPMO measure. The fourth component, and one thing that really distinguishes Six Sigma from Lean, was this top-down organizational infrastructure that includes the training and certifying of your problem-solving team practitioners, your green belts, and the experts that lead them, your black belts and your master black belts, and defined organizational roles for Six Sigma champions and process owners, and a business case review process. And the people that we have do that, we call money belts, to go along with the green belt and black belt theme, and an infrastructural tie to the executive leadership that made sure your program matched the strategic goals of your business.
Okay, so that defined Six Sigma, and you previously defined Lean. So how does Lean Six Sigma differ from its constituent Lean and Six Sigma parts?
Well, a lot in common. Lean Six Sigma typically uses the Six Sigma infrastructure and the DMAIC problem-solving process, and then incorporates some of those Lean principles and concepts into each of the projects and adds to the Six Sigma tools the Lean tools. The differences in comparison to Six Sigma, Lean Six Sigma provides solutions that are typically faster and more efficient than you'd have got going with Six Sigma alone. In comparison to straight Lean, Lean Six Sigma has a much stronger governance program, which gives you that strategic tie and focus, and more of an infrastructure to do institutionalization.
Okay, so Doug, how do software standards relate to Lean Six Sigma?
Well, Lean thinkers maintain that it is impossible to improve any process until it's standardized. So standards are the backbone of Lean Six Sigma. I was just reading the recent book on Toyota's Lean production system by Morgan and Liker, and they say that standardization is critical to Lean product development because it underpins all of the other Lean principles, since it reduces variation and creates greater flexibility and more predictable outcomes. And in that, they specifically cite process standardization as one of the key areas where standardization is needed.
Okay, so if I were going to implement this, what should I focus on first, Lean or Six Sigma?
Well, at Northrop Grumman, we have legacy organizations with strong backgrounds separately in Lean, in Six Sigma, and in CMMI. And as we merge all of our legacy companies, we've seen that each of those is an advantage that will help speed that organization's process in our combined competitive excellence program compared to organizations that didn't have a strength in one of those. So we don't choose a lean path or a Six Sigma path. So we use an integrated approach where we draw on whatever's the best combination of tools to solve the particular problem you're facing at that point. But if you have a blank slate, you get a different answer to the question. And then you really want to ask, well, which of the tools do I focus on first, the Lean tools or the Six Sigma tools? And you'll get an answer that you'll recognize as a classic once you work with black belts. They frequently answer, it depends. And in this case, it depends on the reason you're interested in adopting a Lean Six Sigma program. Since most processes have way more waste than value in them, Toyota, even being world-class, most of their processes are only achieving about 30% of the time and effort in them being value-added. So the conventional wisdom is you use Lean first to eliminate lots of that waste, and then you use Six Sigma to reduce the variation and improve the quality on the smaller piece that you've got left, the part that adds value. That's the approach to take if you're looking to improve either a particular process or an entire value stream. And again, by value stream, I mean the whole set of processes involved in transforming raw materials into a product that gets delivered to a customer. But there are situations where you'd want to start with Six Sigma strength. If your greatest need is problem-solving tiger teams, then you know you'd want to look at Six Sigma's DMAIC problem-solving process first as your first order business. And if you've got a burning platform, you know, if you need organizational change and you've read Jack Welch's book about how he saved billions of dollars at GE and turned it around with Six Sigma, you know, then the infrastructure and training that are traditionally associated with Six Sigma are a much better approach to touching all the organization, all the employees in your organization.
Well, Doug, you mentioned CMMI earlier. Can you describe how Lean Six Sigma might interact with CMMI?
Well, we talked about the synergy between Lean and Six Sigma and CMMI, and prior experience with either one we've seen helps you adopt the other both faster and understand it more easily. Both share the same Deming and Schuert quality improvement routes, and there's lots of commonality, especially between Six Sigma and CMMI Level 4. So we see Six Sigma organizations typically using Six Sigma teams when they go to implement CMMI. And they'll find that many of their Six Sigma team outputs are very useful as artifacts once they get to a CMMI SCAMPI assessment. When we see mature CMMI organizations taking on Six Sigma, they find that their defect prevention work and all of their Level 4 quantitative management work is readily applicable to the work they do in Six Sigma. You do get some contrast in that Six Sigma is typically a collection of somewhat independent short-term teams, each that work hard to narrow their scope, whereas a CMMI improvement initiative is typically a continuous long-term effort where you're trying to institutionalize a bunch of practices across a large group. So a little bit of a difference there between the narrow short-term and long-term focus. And Six Sigma and CMMI also measure improvement a little bit differently. Six Sigma has this heavy focus on measuring quality in terms of defect delivered to the customer. And that, you know, back based on that 3.4 defects per million opportunity level associated with, you know, achieving a process Sigma level of 6. The CMMI, on the other hand, by design, focuses on upstream measurements of processes used to build the product. And so you get focus on maturity level 5 as a leading indicator of your ability to produce a high-quality product in the future.
Okay, well, thanks. You know, Doug, I've heard a lot about theory of constraints and its relationship to Lean Six Sigma, and I know some people are confused about that. So could you describe theory of constraints and what it has to do with Lean Six Sigma?
Yeah, the constraint is that a title that was Lean Six Sigma Theory of Constraints is just too big. So most Lean Six Sigma programs do include theory of constraints because there's a high degree of alignment between theory of constraints and Lean. Theory constraints at a high level is a five-step process where first you identify the system's constraint, whatever system you're looking at, find the piece that is the bottleneck to controlling the rate of the system. And the second step is to exploit that constraint. So you do whatever you need to that constraint to maximize its throughput. The next step is to subordinate the other processes around the constraint. So you get rid of any sub-optimization of those processes so that you help exploit that constraint. And then the fourth step is to elevate the constraint, to make it more capable. And then finally, you repeat the cycle. So once you've removed whatever your current constraint out of the system is, you'll typically find that there's a new one. And so now you go work on that. So you can see that the theory of constraints and its related application to scheduling called critical chain focus on that lean principle we talked about of flow. So it's very consistent with that and lean's emphasis on reducing multitasking. So in a Lean Six Sigma program, typically you see theory constraints used as the particular tool along with the lean tools and the Six Sigma tools whenever the problem is manifested as a bottleneck that needs to be solved.
Okay. So, you know, one thing that I always try to talk about, especially when presenting a certain process models or methodologies to senior management, are the benefits. So can you briefly describe what the benefits as offered by a Lean Six Sigma deployment?
Well, there are a bunch of Lean Six Sigma benefits once you choose it for implementing as your improvement methodology. Key ones are improvements in quality, shortened cycle time, and lower costs. Lean Six Sigma answers the old adage that, you know, pick any two out of three, good, fast, or cheap for your software. Because Lean Six Sigma gives you the tools to do all three, to produce products better, faster, and cheaper. As a result of that, you get improved, consistent, predictable results. So you get an overall increase in your production and the opportunity for growth. You increase the confidence of your customers in that your ability to consistently perform. You get new opportunities for focused and prioritized improvement opportunities coming out of your initiative. And you get integration and alignment of processes that let you achieve planned results. So you develop an organizational confidence as well. And it lets you focus on your process improvement and efficiency throughout those value streams in your organization.
Okay, Doug, what are the biggest challenges in implementing Lean Six Sigma?
Well, number one, hands down, is executive sponsorship. If you have lip service support or even less from your sponsoring executive, you have just a huge challenge. There's a very high correlation we've seen between the success rate of implementations and the commitment of senior managers in those organizations, the amount of interest and participation they contribute to the program. Second, it'd probably be being overly prescriptive in your program. Implementing Lean Six Sigma processes and practices in support of specific process improvement requirements verbatim can be very costly and may not reflect often doesn't reflect the specific business requirements of the organization. So this approach gets you an overly prescriptive process that can actually increase costs, slow product cycles, and will just destroy the credibility of your process improvement implementation with both management and the software development staff. A third challenge I'd cite is the frequent mistake of measuring activities instead of results. If you're doing an enterprise approach where you need to track how much of the organization you've touched with Lean Six Sigma, then it's worth checking to see what percentage of your population you've got trained. But otherwise, you need to make sure your program is perceived as adding value. You know, your measures have to be viewed by stakeholders as being realistic, attainable, and readily understood. And a danger with Lean Six Sigma is that you often link it to the numbers and types of projects chartered, the number of belts trained. And that's a recipe for make work as opposed to real improvement. So measurement of Lean Six Sigma projects should be based on either bottom or top line savings or generation by teams. And, you know, to do that, many Six Sigma programs, as you distinguish between hard and soft benefits, will only count the hard benefits to make sure they've got bottom line measures that really resonate with senior management.
So what are the most commonly used Lean Six Sigma tools?
Well, Toyota says 5 whys is their most common tool, Kathy. They use it every day. Whenever there's a problem, they ask why 5 times, trying to get beyond the symptoms and the cause of the symptom to a root cause, much like we do when we're using a fishbone cause and effect chart. For Lean Six Sigma teams, Ishikawa once observed that 95% of all quality-related problems can be solved with those 7 basic QC tools, and that's not far off for Lean Six Sigma teams. Additionally, all of our Lean Six Sigma projects have a charter, which will include a business case, and they'll also prepare at least one tollgate review package. So those are some tools you'll see used a lot. And teams that are doing a particularly lean focus will almost always use value stream mapping as one of their tools.
Okay, well, I'm going to follow up with one last question that might be just a little bit sticky. I saw something recently in Fortune. I think there was an article in Fortune Business Week, and I think Dilbert even joined in the game recently trying to discredit Six Sigma.
Yeah, well, you know, Six Sigma has both its promoters and its detractors. The discredited line, though, was just Scott Adams poking fun in Dilbert. There are some valid criticisms, but you can't discredit the billions of dollars that are in documented, verified, hard savings across hundreds of companies. In that sense, Six Sigma is a little bit of a victim of its own success. Anything that's implemented that widely across so many companies is going to be poorly adopted in some places. So, you know, you had detractors calling it a fad for years, and it's continued to be picked up and grow and show real results. In our book, we've tried to stress how to avoid the path that can lead to those bureaucratic, inefficient implementations. That the article that was in Fortune was quoting a consultant of a competing method, and he managed to find 53 large companies that had announced Six Sigma programs that trailed the S&P 500. Well, their big complaint was that Six Sigma is narrowly designed to fix an existing process and isn't great for innovation. Well, you know, when all you got is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. Many black belts were quick to point out the problem in that article with some unsubstantiated statistics and wonder why people would complain that Six Sigma is designed to fix an existing process when that's what it's for. That's what it does. So Business Week kind of echoed that same anti-innovation thesis. But, you know, they also noted that Six Sigma popularity continues to grow, that 82 of the Fortune 100 embrace it, and the number of Lean Six Sigma conferences out there continues to grow. So, it's not a cure-all, and I disagree with anybody who suggests that it ought to be used by all parts of the company for everything they do. But I do want to counter that impression that it's antithetical to innovation. You know, it's not the tool you want to use for your R&D group to do, you know, groundbreaking innovative design, but it is the tool you want to use if they need to fix their accounting process. And Six Sigma also does need to find innovative solutions to problems. And so, you know, being a continuous improvement methodology and people complain about innovation, they've been very fertile ground for Altshuler's work on trees, the theory of inventive problem solving. It's based on empirical patterns of inventiveness and creativity, and you know, in a typical Six Sigma way, is far more effective at achieving technical innovation to solving a problem than just using simple brainstorming. So, you can do Six Sigma poorly, but you can certainly do it very well.
Well, thank you, Doug. I appreciate that clarification, and I appreciate your time, and really want to thank you for providing such valuable information in support of the Lean Six Sigma topic today.
Thank you, Kathy Land and Doug Smith, for addressing the use of standards and Lean Six Sigma to improve software processes.
Well, thank you. My pleasure.
Thank you, Scott.
You have mentioned some subjects that are covered in depth in publications that I'd like to point out to our listeners. These are listed in the show notes on the website and email newsletter, but I'll mention a few here to start with. The first two are IEEE Computer Society ReadyNote guidebooks. One is titled IEEE Software Engineering Standard Support for the CMMI Project Planning Process Area. And that one was written by Kathy. The other is IEEE Software Engineering Standard Support for ISO 9001, Getting Your Organization Started. Both Kathy and John wrote this one. These ready notes can be found at www.computer.org/readynotes. There are also some very useful books available through John Wiley and IEEE Computer Society Press. They'll also be found on Amazon.com. One is entitled Jumpstart CMM/CMMI Software Process Improvement Using IEEE Software Engineering Standards. Other books come from the Practical Support series. For example, Practical Support for CMMI-SW Software Project Documentation Using IEEE Software Engineering Standards. Another, Practical Support for ISO 9001 Software Project Documentation Using IEEE Software Engineering Standards. And there's a new title coming in June of 2008. That one's called Practical Support for Lean Six Sigma Software Process Documentation Using IEEE Software Engineering Standards. Well, that about wraps it up for this episode of IEEE Talk Software Process. Thanks for listening. We'd like to hear from you. Please email podcasts@computer.org to give us your comments and feedback, or visit us at computer.org/podcasts. Until next time, this is Scott Roy Smith saying, may your advancement be manifest.